because whatever you can get here in this world is compared to a fraction or a portion of a drop from that ocean. Does that make sense? And the material platform, because we're used to it, it's just like when you do something new, unless it's really gross, you can't tell the difference. But as you are dealing with it, you become more expert, then the slightest, little, subtlest changes you can appreciate. So we've been in the material world for unlimited lifetimes, so we've been quite expert at observing material, happiness and distress. So if it's just a touch more than the other, then that's considered very great, because we're working in a very limited sphere. Right? Does that make some sense? So that's why he'll bring it out very nicely just in this way.
The Mahabharata, the extension of the Mahabharata is Harivamsa, in which you find the pastimes of Krishna, a lot of the pastimes, by focusing the camera from the Pandava to the other one, and then you talk to the Mahabharata.
No, he's not saying, could you hear? He was saying that the Harivamsa is part of the Mahabharata, then describes, pastimes of Krishna and all that. So why is he saying there's no pastimes? No, it's not that there's no pastime. The whole thing is a pastime. In the beginning, when he wrote the Mahabharata, he actually conceived of it in 100,000 verses. Then he expanded that to 600,000. But he only taught what was written and taught was 100,000. Then after that, then he conceived of 150 verses, which comprised the first and second chapter of the Mahabharata. So the whole thing is summarized there. So every important, like, pastime and important element is brought out in the conversations of, Suta Goswami with the sages, and Dhritarashtra with Sanjay. Dhritarashtra gives the most. But when Suta mentions it in short to the sages, he only mentions the Pandavas. All other things are just dropped like that. So the Pandavas become, they're actually the central point. And in it, and Dhritarashtra brings up a lot about Krishna. Because he figured out is that if the Pandavas have God on their side, it's not really great for his son. Like that. So that's there. The point is that in those stories of the God of the Pandavas and their relationship with Krishna, there is so much emphasis on morality, Dharma Shastra, what's right, the facility you get from it, right? Because it's like I tell you to do an activity. The natural thing is why. That's the normal thing. So you could say, because it pleases Krishna. Okay, great. So then that may inspire us, may not. So then the next thing is that, oh, by doing this, it'll increase your intelligence, or this, or that. It's just like, we gave the example before. Take your early morning bath. It's a cold bath, okay? Then, okay, why? It pleases Krishna. Okay. So some will do it because of that. Then others is, because then it's clean, it gets rid of the, it develops the, the finer, that means the semen in the body, it makes the skin bright and lustrous and, develops the health. There's so many, considerations like that, intelligence is that. Some may, oh, okay, that's nice. Others that, okay, when you take a bath with warm water, then all the bugs that live on your skin get very enthusiastic, multiply by millions. And if you don't rinse off with cold water afterwards to kill them, then you're going to be itching and scratching all day. Like that. You're going to have problems. So then some may take, oh, just like that. They're not worried about intelligence and finer things and, all these kind of things. Then there's the last one that's mentioned is it makes you attractive to the opposite sex. Bingo! Okay, I'm in there taking that bath. So that's the thing. And on some things it stops there. Other things will say, if you don't take the bath, if you go in front of the deity without having you taken your bath, brush your teeth, you go to hell for 7 lifetimes. Then some people, okay. Really ignorant, then they'll do it. Does that make sense? So all those are presented. all those are presented. But then the problem comes is because it's overwhelming in volume, the tendency is you will miss the point. It means people in Kali Yuga aren't that focused. So the Mahabharata was written so that for those who are not focused, you know, the women, Shudras, Vaishyas, friends of the twice born, they will have trouble focusing unless they see a result. So therefore, inspire them, do that. But at the same time, it keeps their attention. They'll read the whole thing. They'll learn all the things. But the inspiration, much of the time, is the benefit gotten from it. Right? So that's Narad Muni's point, is that because of that moral or fruitive, because morality is sub-religious, and the fruitive is sub-religious, all these, then the tendency is to be distracted by that. So what he's saying is you have to present the Vedic literature that directly points out Krishna, right? As we see is that after this conversation, starting from the next chapter, the Lord's pastimes, I mean, the revised or the real Mahabharata is presented, right? So 7th through 19th chapter, that is the Mahabharata as it actually, the real essence. Then that's filled out to 100,000 verses that we know as the Mahabharata. But the real essence is what's given in these chapters after this discussion. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, it's like the, does that make sense?
Yeah.
The Lord then spoke to Narada. His words dispelled Narada's unhappiness. Four points he made are most relevant to the philosophical significance of question 8 and 9. Okay, that's from 5.3. Unqualified persons cannot have the Lord's darshan. Still, the Lord granted darshan to Narada in order to increase his desire for him. By devotional service, even for a few days, young Narada at that time will get Dridhamati, firm intelligence. And four, this intelligence is eternal. Right? Note, in this purport to verse 21, Srila Prabhupada leaves us with no doubt that every trace of inclination to perform karma, self-interested activity, within the modes of material nature, must be eradicated from the heart of the neophyte to gain the qualification of seeing the Lord directly, face to face. His divine grace writes, in the beginning of devotional the beginning of devotional service starts from the point when one is freed from at least two forms of material modes, namely the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. The result is exhibited by the signs of being freed from kama, lust, and loba, covetousness. That is to say, one must be freed from the desires for sense gratification and avarice for sense gratification. The balanced mode of nature is goodness. And to be completely freed from all material tinges is to become freed from the mode of goodness also. To search the audience of God in a lonely forest is considered to be in the mode of goodness. One can go out into the forest to attain spiritual perfection. But that does not mean that one can see the Lord personally there. One must be completely freed from all material attachment and be situated on the plane of transcendence, which alone will help the devotee get in personal touch with the personality of Godhead. Yet, at the same time, even a neophyte can begin to see the Lord face to face by following the Pancharatrika Marg that Sri Narad Muni is so well known for representing. In another purport, Bhagavatam 4.27.24, His Divine Grace offers this interesting way of identifying who is a genuine devotee in the disciplic succession. Quote, all devotees are in the disciplic succession stemming from Narad Muni, because they worship the deity according to Narad Muni's direction, namely the Narada Pancharatra, or the Pancharatrika Vidhi. A devotee follows the principles of Pancharatrika Vidhi, as well as Bhagavat Vidhi. Bhagavat Vidhi includes preaching work, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, the hearing and chanting of the glories of Lord Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. The Pancharatrika Vidhi includes Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vedinam. A devotee rigidly follows the instructions of Narad Muni. How practically that is to be done is explained in his purport to verse 21 of the present chapter we are studying. Quote, the best method is that one should live in a place where the transcendental form of the Lord is worshipped. The temple of the Lord is a transcendental place, whereas the forest is a maturely good habitation. A neophyte devotee is always recommended of worship the deity of the Lord, Archana, rather than go into the forest to search out the Lord. Devotional service begins from the process of Archana, which is better than going out in the forest. In this present life, which is completely freed from all material hankerings, Sri Narad Muni does not go into the forest, although he can turn every place into Vaikuntha by his presence only. He travels from one planet to another to convert men, gods, Kinaras, Gandharvas, Rishis, Munis, and all others to become devotees of the Lord. By his activities, he has engaged many devotees like Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, and many others in the transcendental service of the Lord. After recounting his meeting with the Supersoul, Narad Muni tells Vyas how he spent the remainder of his life. Narad then describes his next birth as the great sage Narad Muni. Note, one verse from this section is very important for the correct understanding of Vaishnava Vedanta philosophy. Now we're getting into... Prayujamane maitam shudhvagavatim tanu arabdha karma nirvano nyapatat pancha bhautika. Having been awarded a transcendental body befitting an associate of the personality of Godhead, I quit the body made of five material elements and thus all acquired fruit of results of work, karma, stopped. Getting purified of the karmic results of working under the modes of nature does not entail stopping all activity to annihilate the self by fixing the mind in meditation upon a void or impersonalistic non-entity called Shunya, Nirvana, or Nirakara Brahman. It entails rendering devotional service for the satisfaction of the senses of the Supreme Person, Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. This is done by following the ninefold path of Bhakti Yoga, that covers two margas, or paths of progress, Bhagavat and Pancharatrika, as made quite clear in a purport cited earlier. Even if a devotee falters on these paths due to the persistent allurement of Maya and has to accept another material body, the Lord will help him achieve success in the next life by the mercy of divine remembrance from within the heart. The narrative about Bharat Maharaj in the fifth canto is the perfect illustration of this. Matir mayi nirbhadhyayam navipadyeta karhichit prajasarga nirodhepi smritis cha mad anugrahata. Intelligence engaged in my devotion cannot be thwarted at any time, even at the time of creation, as well as at the time of annihilation. Your remembrance will continue by my mercy. Vyasa then told of the transcendental activities that Narad Muni now continuously performs. Note, the essence of Narad's transcendental activity in his spiritual body is stated in verse 32, Harikatha. Narad Muni is the original traveling Sankirtan devotee in universal history. Narad finishes his instructions to Vyas, and Sutta Goswami narrates the departure of Narad. Sutta then describes Narad's glories. So the element is that to see the Lord face to face, then one has to be freed from passion and ignorance, and even goodness. So Narad Muni was freed from passion and ignorance, but not goodness. So therefore he was attached to the mode of goodness. He was in the forest. Therefore the Lord came, he saw, and then left. Right? So that's there. So the Pancharatrika is such a perfect system that we can see the Lord face to face whether we understand it or not. Deity is there, we can see. So this combination between the Bhagavat and the Pancharatrika is very important for the conditioned living entity. Because Pancharatra is actually just Bhagavat in a formalized form that addresses the conditioned nature so that it will be properly engaged in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? Like that. So on the conditioned platform, the two go together. In sadhana bhakti, then pancharatra is always part, because that's all the form of everything we do. We get up in the morning, offer our obeisances, put the bed away, brush our teeth, take our bath, put tilak, dress nicely, wear neck beads, wear Brahmin thread, go to the temple, ring the bell, offer obeisances, have Mangal Arati, chant our japa, worship the spiritual master, worship the deity, hear Bhagavatam class, take prasad, honor Charinamrita, honor the flowers of the Lord and garlands and other prasad, render service during the day, are nice with devotees, study scriptures on a regular basis, worship Tulsi, take care of guests, preach, chant our japa, like that. Clean, the temple and do that. That's all pancharatra. Right? So if we look at that, that is our day. So our lifestyle is pancharatric. The essence of that we see is in that relationship with the deity, the devotees, and preaching, hearing and chanting, like that. So the Bhagavat is included as part of pancharatra. Just to make sure that the conditioned soul does it. But as much as the Bhagavat can be increased, then that is good. Does that make sense? Anything outside of that, that's Varnashram. In other words, all these elements are listed in Varnashram, but these elements of Pancharatra are what is exactly connected with the Lord. Right? Anything other than that, then is connected, with family and social things and economics that ultimately you're going to bring to the Lord, but they themselves are not that direct. Does that make sense? So the Bhagavat reflects into the material world. Those elements that directly connect to the Lord, obviously, those are the Pancharatra. Those are ones that connect to the Lord, but we may not know it, that's what we call Vedic. Does that make sense? Like that. Because when it's reflected here, there's the perversion that we think we're the center. So that's the next point they're probably pointing out, is one has to get rid of the desire for sense gratification and that making those arrangements. The words he used here. Okay, material attachment situated on transcendence. Okay, so these are another form of and lust and covetousness. So lust is ignorance that we think that the material energy is going to give us our result. The covetousness is actually the position we're starting from. We're envious of God, we want to be God. So this desire to control, this desire to... this fear of our position, fear of losing things, the feeling of security, these are all the same thing, just different angles of it. And then this lust and wanting to enjoy and these kind of things, the attachment, like that, this is also the same thing. So what we see is that these are the two things, control and enjoyment, these are the original things that turn us away from Krishna. In other words, our sambandha is wrong. We think I am God rather than I am servant. So then that brings us to the material platform. Then we're attached. That's our prayojana. But we're attached to material enjoyment, being the enjoyer. Does that make sense? So naturally our activities will be mundane. You don't have to mention them separately. So if you make it, I am transcendent, I'm servant of Krishna, and I'm not the enjoyer, Krishna's the enjoyer, then automatically the abhideya, the activity, will be transcendental. Does that make sense? So on that platform, then you can interact with God, because seeing God is abhideya. It's an activity. The feeling you get from seeing Him, that's prayojana. Does that make sense? like that. So the the abideya will be perfect when the other two are proper, because activity always comes after endeavor. I mean, after a need, right? You have a desire that, by contemplating, turns into a need. When you have a need, then you act. Before that, you don't act, right? Because sometimes you have a desire, but you don't do anything, right? You're hungry. This, that, I could do this, I could do that, you know, I could, you know, look in the fridge, I could cook something, or go to the restaurant, or go get some maha, or, you know, not eat, but you don't do anything, because it's still on the platform of desire. You're going, me, food, well, me, this food, me, that food over there, me, no food, you know, like this. So you're just working out relationships there. But then, that's okay. But then give it another half hour, 1 hour, a few hours. Then eating becomes a need. So then you focus and you decide, okay, we're going to do this. And then you'll make the endeavor. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. So because, yeah. So if you change who I am and what are your options and who is going to get the benefit of it, that automatically whatever activity you do is transcendental. Okay. Then, 6.2, question 10 of Bhagavatam is asked by Vyasa of Narada. Question 10 is about Narada's advancement in Krishna consciousness. It has three parts. Part 1, what did you do after the departure of the sages who in your prior birth instructed you? 2, how did you pass that life after initiation, and how did you attain your present body? 3, how are you able to remember your prior birth, which was in a previous day of Brahma? 6.3, so we see here is that means, I say, means, in other words, what did he do? Just immediately, he's in that situation, he's with the sages, he's with his mother dies, you know, and the sages are gone, what does he do? So how does he situate himself? Then, how does he pass that life, what were his activities, right? And then he wants to know, how is it you're able to remember that? You know, that's pretty straightforward. 6.3, philosophical significance of question 10. Inquiring from great devotees helps one advance in Krishna consciousness, and that advancement is never annihilated, as spirit is never annihilated, even at the time of death. 6.4, Narada Muni's answer to the three part of question 10 in philosophical summary. 1. After associating with pure devotees and taking initiation from them, one should become serious about Krishna consciousness. When Krishna kindly removes one's material entanglements, one should devote one's time solely to spiritual development, either by fearlessly traveling or by sitting in a holy place and repeatedly hearing and chanting the holy scriptures.
What does it mean here, fearlessly?
What does it mean by fearlessly? Means traveling fearlessly means you're not worried about how you're going to be taken care of. You know, you just make whatever arrangements come up naturally and then you leave it up to Krishna. But what happens, where you're going to go, what's going to happen, and this and that, that's up to Krishna.
I mean, what does it mean actually traveling here? Because otherwise.
What does it mean traveling here?
Yeah, I mean, otherwise.
Fearlessly traveling. What he's meaning is that one is moving around.
What is the benefit, spiritual benefit, of just traveling around?
What is the benefit of traveling?
In this context.
Because he's saying spiritual development by traveling fearlessly means that you're going to be discussing Krishna consciousness. Means, in other words, one is traveling and hearing and chanting about the holy scriptures, and one is sitting in a holy place and hearing and chanting about the holy scriptures. So in other words, the main thing is that having gotten the association of the pure devotees, and understanding them how to approach the scripture, then with that attitude, then you study and preach it to others, or you sit and hear and chant it yourself. You know, or any combination of that.
So it means preaching. fearlessly traveling.
The first one means preaching. Okay. Fearlessly traveling means preaching. Mm-hmm. Like that. Yes.
What's the qualification for doing one or the other?
You could also say in here, fearlessly traveling could also include the vanaprastha element, where you're just going to hear. In other words, one is traveling to speak, the other one is traveling to hear. Because that's also the brahmacharya, after he finishes gurukul, then many times they take their snataka, they take the position of whatever things that they wanted to gain more that was not specifically available at that place, or taking advantage of special programs happening, then they may travel to, you know, some big gathering and this and that, where there's going to be some, you know, some festival, there's going to be some very nice satsang and association and like that. So one's there traveling to hear. So either of them, or sitting in a lonely place and hearing and chanting the holy scriptures. So that could mean you're sitting and chanting and reading yourself, or sitting in the holy place and who's there at that place, then you hear and chant with them. So both of the, so in any case, they can all be dynamic, but it's just a matter of whether you're moving or sitting in one place. Qualifications. One is that here, because he says fearless, that means you're not overly worried about your facilities. You know, what comes easily, then that's what's accepted. That would be the important. Here also, fearlessly means that you know that Krishna is there. You know, so that one is then on the platform, we understand that I am servant of Krishna. So then Krishna will take care. Also, generally, this would indicate fearlessness is also the symptom of nishta. So on the platform of nishta, then when it's stable, that's a very good time for the traveling. So before that, it's also, traveling also can be nice, but you have to balance it in connection with your service. You know, both, you know, in preaching to the deities and if there's a family situation. So if traveling is not going to benefit the family situation, and therefore is not going to be party to removing the anarthas from the heart, then it may not be so great to travel so much. You know, unless it's going to be something that's very inspiring. You go to a Rath Yatra like this, but if it's just continual, then it may find that the reason one is in family life is because of those needs of that interaction. Being away from them, that interaction's not happening. So one is, even though one's getting so much nice spiritual benefit, in the long run one may feel some lack, and then there may be an overbalance the other way. So the idea is that it should be dealt with in such a way that they inspire each other. Because one is, you know, basically as much as one can be, one is satisfied with one's endeavor in the family situation. So therefore, one feels comfortable to then focus on very, you know, intense spiritual experience. Then having had that spiritual experience, one can go back to the family situation and improve that platform. You know what I'm saying? So they both nourish each other. Though the real thing is when trying to get the spiritual inspiration, and that's only, one is only using the material or the family situation because of the conditioned need for it. That if one doesn't address it, the mind will be distracted from Krishna consciousness and one will be doing that exclusively. So therefore, one enters into that situation so that one is able to gain those things that one feels is important from that association. At the same time as by the mind being peaceful, then one can concentrate on spiritual life. You know, example would be given. The person's not married and they're interested in being married. They'll probably think 24 hours a day, if not more, about marriage and, you know, this one and that one, and that one looks nice, and this one's good, and that one's there, and oh, isn't she fortunate, she found a guy, and oh, isn't he all that, and, you know, and they got this house, and I want a house, and just on and on and on and on. And so, where's the time for Krishna? Then, if you focus it on one person, then in the very beginning there may be a very great amount of attention put there, but after time it just balances out because it's just one person. And then all the other times of the day when, before one had that one person, you would be thinking about a person. You have a person, so you don't think about it. So that frees a great amount of the day then for spiritual endeavor. So that's the point. Then by that, then the taste in that, by comparing the two, one starts to notice that the taste, one is inspired, one in the beginning may be more inspired by the material, less by the spiritual. With time then, you know, one's inspired by both. But then over, you know, time, one sees that the experience gained from the spiritual endeavor and in interacting with devotees on the spiritual platform is much greater and has much more significance than anything on the material platform. Right? Because on the spirit, it doesn't go away. You have a nice, let's say you went to the temple, it was a great kirtan. It doesn't go away. Right? But you had a great time with the person, but then on the material platform, based on material relationship, but then the next time you meet them, they may be distracted by something else and slightly indifferent, that actually in your own mind writes off everything that was good before. Because it's material, it doesn't have any standing, it doesn't have any substance. It's only because it's kind of happening and the illusion's going on, it's being nourished, it has, but as soon as that illusion is broken, it has no meaning. But the spiritual can't be broken because it's eternal. So it has much. So with time, one starts to see this, and then one sees that actually the spiritual is the real thing, and engaging in spiritual activities is the real thing. So therefore, in the family also, the nice thing is just doing spiritual activities. It's not that, oh, it's husband and wife or parent and child or, you know, this and that that gives the taste. No, you happen to perform spiritual activities with the family members. But it's the, and you know, it's convenient, you're there together, you have the facility, they like, you like, so then it works great. But the real thing is that relationship on the spiritual platform. That comes with time. Does that make some sense? Okay. Is that okay? Okay? Anything else on this first question? You know, so the fearlessness means is one's fixed in devotional service. One is not fearful of that I am servant of Krishna, one's willing to function on that platform, then traveling becomes useful. If that's not so fixed, then traveling becomes, you know, occasionally when it's favorable. But as a permanent or major aspect of one's life, then in other words, one should create a balance. Is that okay? Second answer. Thus, by taking initiation from and serving one's bona fide spiritual masters, and by following the regulative principles and practices of devotional service, one's love of God will gradually progress in its development until it matures beyond the probationary regulative stage. Then, by the Lord's causeless mercy, one will be able in ecstasy to directly see and hear Krishna by his mercy. To reach the stage of ecstatic love for Krishna, one should receive training in a temple, perform archana, and there serve Krishna. These practices will naturally increase one's desire to serve more and more. Thus, through intensely hankering for Krishna's service, one will directly experience Krishna's transcendental presence. Even a short period of training in devotional service ultimately, but inevitably, leads to association with Krishna. Whatever devotional service one renders is never lost, but accumulates until it is completely mature. Okay, so we see is by associating with the devotees, you gain the seed of devotional service. That seed is that one wants to serve Krishna. right? One wants to. That's the actual point. So then by following the process of the sadhana process, the regulative process, that at regulated intervals you will do things that connect you to Krishna. Right? Mangala, you go and see Krishna. You know, you'll go for darshanarti, you'll sing for Krishna, you'll dance for Krishna, you'll cook for Krishna. It's all regulated, and so that you're doing something. Then with time, then if one maintains good association, then you naturally want to increase that. So the key here, as we see, is where it says, thus, through intensely hankering for Krishna's service, one will directly experience Krishna's transcendental presence. So that's the key, is that hankering. Right? Material world, we hanker after material things. That puts us into the material platform. So by hankering to be serve Krishna, then that will put us on the spiritual platform. It's the same thing. Right? Does that make sense? Generally we think some intellectual, that's what Prabhupada said, it's not an intellectual adjustment, it's not this. All it is that we learn to hanker for Krishna. That is what will get us to perfection. So all the activities are simply to put us in contact with devotees and the Lord in such a way that we decide that this is actually what we want. Does that make sense? Yes.
This last word, completely mature. How do you describe that?
Completely mature, prema.
Prema?
Yeah. Yeah, because before that it's still developing. Rati is still a bud. You know, it's still not... It's there. It's counted within the 10 levels of prema, but it's the bud. But prema is where it opens, right? And then there's all the different levels of experience once it's opened. So in other words, it'll just keep developing. If it's being done and you don't know it's devotional service, it's a jnata sukriti, that stays with you. And it will accumulate, you know, time after time, life after life, until it brings you to the point of shraddha, that you take up the process. Then in the association of the devotees, you take it. Then it will keep increasing until it brings you through the stages of devotional service to prema. And then at that time, that's fully mature. Is that okay? So that's why it's Maharaj is bringing up the other day, it's the sadhu sangha. That's the most important, is this being together, discussing and trying to appreciate and share one's understandings and realize that's the most important. Anything else on that? Okay, then question three. Thus, a pure and sincere devotee experiences the association of the Lord through continuously and selflessly chanting and preaching. In this way, prepares for his liberation, going back to Godhead, in his spiritual body, in his next life. Even as he serves in this life, he surcharges his present material body with spiritual energy. Although a great liberated devotee may again have to take birth, neither his birth nor death will be ordinary. His appearance and disappearance will be like Krishna's, who carries on his activities in an unlimited transcendental body. By following in the footsteps of great authorized devotees like Narad Muni, a pure devotee is awarded so much benediction from the Lord that he continuously, lovingly chants Krishna's glories. Thus he penetrates the attention of the Lord and obliges the Lord to always be visible to him. One can cross the ocean of miseries only through devotional service. One should therefore change all his thinking and activities to Krishna consciousness. Krishna conscious thinking and activities. Since we know from Narad Muni how to achieve a static love of God, we should use our free will to execute devotional service. Our mission should be to preach the glories of devotional service to the suffering souls within this world, as Narad himself does. Okay, so he's mentioning here, by following in the footsteps of the devotees, we're always hearing and chanting about the Lord. Through that, one actually penetrates the Lord. Right? Because that means there's a trust. Right? Means how do you judge a closeness of a relationship? Right? It's trust. You can say it's a close relationship, intimate, we have a great relationship, but what is it actually? It's trust. So here is that one can trust that the relationship is stable and steady. God's always steady, so that's not the problem. He's already sitting in our heart. But the point is we have to get to the point where we're sitting in His heart. Right? So that means He has to trust that we are always going to be consistent in our affection towards Him. Right? Because you don't give your heart to someone who doesn't deal with it nicely. You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't work like that. And we can see here is Krishna is male, and He does not like being treated like furniture by females. Right? That's probably the male's biggest complaint in their dealing with females, is the furniture mode. You know? So therefore, why is it there? It comes from Krishna. So Krishna is not going to completely give Himself as long as He's being dealt with like furniture. Right? Not that one doesn't love one's furniture. It's great furniture. You like sitting on it when you like to sit on it. You point it out to people that, hey, isn't this great furniture? You know, because it's your furniture. So that's the point, is that we're feminine, and this is what we do to Krishna. Like that. You know, someday we're fired up and all that. No, no, you think about it. Here is a person that whenever you feel like it, and you go to the temple, and you have a good mood and reciprocate and offer prayers, and He's there smiling. Does He ever go, where were you all day? You know, you didn't spend any time. You know, you didn't come to Mount Vartik yesterday. And, you know, I was waiting for you. Does it ever happen? No. That's the point. Is that He? So that proves His affection. Whenever you approach Him, then... He's a sequel is sticking out. Whenever you approach Him, He's there. And immediately you will reciprocate. But when you're not there, He's waiting. Right? So as you reciprocate, then He does. But that doesn't mean He's completely giving His heart. He has affection, but He can't, because it's not consistent. Whether we're in the temple, out of the temple, walking or sitting or resting or whatever we're doing, that we're always absorbed in Krishna. Then Krishna, you penetrate the Lord. Right? Then He notices this person is always there. Because ashray means spiritual, means is stable. He's eternally the vishay, the enjoyer. So that means we have to eternally be ashray, the enjoyed. Does that make sense? Then the relationship works. Does that make sense? Yes.
It's interesting, Yuga Swami says, ashray to be adhar. He mentions, he doesn't use the word ashray, he uses the word adhar for it. Like you said, the basis for affection.
Yeah, because adhar means it's, the basis will be is that Krishna is rasa. Krishna is not inner rasa, He is rasa. So the devotee, by what rasa that they have, their affection towards Krishna, they draw that from Him. Does that make sense? Mother just showed it. She's in parental rasa. Means she's in that mood of serving Krishna as a parent. Krishna, all rasas are in Him. Therefore, when she comes in front of Him, that draws from Him the feeling of a son. And He'll relate on that. Does that make sense? Dhruva Maharaj is like a kid, so that draws from Krishna that more like the father. Right? The cowherd boys come, that draws from him as a friend. You know the cows, then he's the cowherd, you know, the protector of the cows. Does that make some sense? So the ashra is the basis of the relationship, but it's being done to please the Vishai. Right? So that's why everything centers around the ashray. right? The situation is for the ashram. Krishna has a relationship with Mother Yashoda in her house, right, with the cowherd boys in the field. Does that make sense? Because that's their place. It's the ashray's place, right? The cowherd boys can't manifest their full, you know, playfulness with Krishna in Mother Yashoda's house, right? But because they're also friends of Krishna, then it works very nicely, right? Because mothers, and you know, can accommodate all the other kids, so in a very nice, pleasant way, they can be playful with Krishna and joke and be there with Krishna. But their place is the field. You know what I'm saying? So it's manifest there. That's the whole point. So the rasa, you have to create the place. Right? Does that make sense? That's why family life, you have to have a place. You know, you have the land, you have the house, you have the furniture, you have the facility, all these things. That is then the place at which those rasas can be tasted. Does that make sense? So it becomes the base. So Krishna's attention is on the devotee. But you can't fully attach his attention if your attention is not fully on him. He comes as Paramatma. He's always there. He's always with you. But if you want Swayam Krishna to catch his attention, then you always have to be absorbed in him. Otherwise, Paramatma is there with you wherever you go. You know, Krishna is not going to leave us. We leave him, but he doesn't leave us. You know, so we have to appreciate the affection that he has. He goes with us everywhere. Whenever we decide that we are devotional and interrelate with him, he's right there to receive it. He's not complaining. Right? So that is the masculine position. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Where does the inconsistency come from?
Where does the inconsistency come from?
The same thing as having a doubt that Krishna actually cares.
Where does the inconsistency come from? A doubt can be, the impersonalism is that anything material is giving me trouble, so therefore spiritual can't necessarily be personal. That's one aspect. The other, excuse me, is the inherent fickleness of the feminine nature. So the jiva is feminine. So in the spiritual world, that fickleness creates variety. And because it's always directed at Krishna, it creates transcendental variety that is pleasing to Krishna. But when we come here, that fickleness is still there. But the difficulty comes is that it's not directed at Krishna. So it can't please, our fickleness here can't please Krishna. Does that make sense? Okay. So anything else? Any comments? Or yes?
Some time ago, upon Krishna Prabhu had mentioned that actually those great sages, Narada Muni, they were not just ordinary sages, they were four Kumaras. So that means this example is given only in the, it's not just association of, you know, like any association of even any kind of devotees, but only of very high.
Oh, okay, did you hear? He was saying is that Anupam Krishna Prabhu had pointed out that somewhere it's mentioning that those sages, those Bhagavatas, those were the four Kumaras. So the point is then only in such association. That's actually why the Bhagavatam doesn't mention who they are. Because then you will take it as an excuse. Oh, I didn't come in contact with such great persons, so it's all right for me to continue on as a nonsense because, you know, I haven't gotten... That's why also the point of it's so attractive to the conditioned soul that I fell from Brahman. Because if I fell from Brahman, I'm doing activity. That's a step up. So, hey, I'm progressive. You know, don't get on my case, you know, to, you know, get it together. I'm already moving forward. I, you know, fell from the Brahman to here, so at least I'm moving forward. Mm-hmm. So that's why these things aren't mentioned. Because otherwise, then one will say, oh, well, he's a, you know, Prabhupada's a grihasa. Well, he's a pure devotee. The reason he does all those things, the reason the acharyas do it, to show that it's there. They just, you know, one day there was a little puff of smoke and there's Prabhupada sitting there, or Bhakti Vinod Thakur and all that. He had 12 children. right? His wife was happy. He was out traveling. He was a distant magistrate. So he made the material things work. He balanced between, you can't say anything's not full on, it's not a full on occupation to be a district magistrate. Right? You can't say that family life with 12 kids isn't full on. And doing this, he absorbed himself, wrote books, preached, so no one can say that it can't be done. Maybe we don't write as many books as him, have as many kids as him, or are not a district magistrate. But we can't say that it can't be done. Right? You know? So that's the whole point, why they do this. So that we can't. So it's not mentioned because it's not important. Because otherwise we just know it's Bhagavatas, it's great personalities. So therefore we'll be looking for Bhagavat's great personality. If it says it's the four Kumaras, then it's all, oh, well, we didn't meet them, so how did it all? So that's why the essence has gotten to. The essence is not that it's the four Kumaras. The essence is that it's great. It's persons who are absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Like that, yes.
Is there actually any reference anywhere?
I don't know, you'd have to...
Yes, it's in the Brahmavarta Puran, Brahmakanda chapter 21.
Which Puran?
Brahma Vaivarta. But you'll notice Brahma Vaivarta is passion. So then it's like you want to know who's this, you know, like that. So, you know what I'm saying? So that's why they're put in these places. You know, it's like in the mode of goodness. I remember like this. Someone would blew, right? They were in the temple there with you, they blew. One day it just disappeared. It's kind of like, well, what happened to him? Well, I don't know. You know? Then 3 months later, 6 months later, he shows up again. You know, at the door looking a bit bedraggled and everything. He says, you know, oh, Hari Bao, you know, you're back, yeah, you know, like that. Says, yeah, you know, Maya really got me that time. You know, like this. No one even bothers asking what Maya got into. You know? He may say, you know, yeah, you know, this or that, or, you know, something like that, and that's it. And it's a, you know, it's a 5 second conversation, and then, you know, he gets his BTG box and, you know, goes and, you know, whatever. Yeah. As the day he left, that he walks in and just continues, and no one even bothers. Nowadays, you have to know exact detail and this and that, and, you know, like that. And, you know, it's just, it's the mode of passion, mode of ignorance. Because somehow it's felt it will really help, but it doesn't. Point is that Maya's strong, he became distracted, but Maya also didn't offer anything, so he's back. That's the real point. Does that make sense? So they're there, it's nice, but you always have to keep that in mind that these informations are, the angle on it is there for that. Because it makes it more interesting. You know? Bhagavatam, you know, the king meets Urvasi, you know, and over, you know, one to maximum three shlokas, then they describe the thing. Mahabharat, you know, goes on for a whole page, and, you know, the color, how far his tongue rolled out, you know, and how big and bulgy his eyes got, and, you know, like that, because then it's, oh, wow, hey, this is happening. Maybe just say he was attracted by the beauty of the girl, and therefore, you know, then it's kind of like, you know, yeah. But for the sages, they just know what material energy means. So boys and girls get attracted. It follows the same exact pattern. So, okay, so we got attracted by the upsar. Okay, Hari Bao. Then what? Okay? Does that make sense? Okay, so then we'll end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Janitai Gaur of Padma.
Some people say that in some parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam, a lot of different essential descriptions of the nature, like one Kandama Muni to Kavapuji and that.
Well, that's to understand how amazing it was. That's the whole point.
You know, it wasn't just something ordinary.